Thank you for using American Roaming Network. Charges will be $2.99 per call and $1.99 per minute, plus applicable taxes. Please enter the number you wish to call, area code first, on your keypad. Thank you for using American Roaming Network. Charges will be $2.99 per call and $1.99 per minute, plus applicable taxes. Please enter the number you wish to call, area code first, on your keypad. Please press 1 for a collect call or enter your American Express card or calling card number. Thank you. Please hold for billing acceptance. We cannot bill a collect call to that number. Please press 1 for a collect call or enter your American Express card or calling card number.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hello, everyone.
And out in Signal Land, we have Gila.
Good evening.
We didn't expect me to call on you first. And Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
And we have Alex.
Yes. Hello, everybody. I'll take my cue from Kyle tonight.
And Alex, you're overseas. Is that correct?
Actually, I'm not. I'm leaving tomorrow morning to head overseas. So I decided I wasn't going to head out on Tuesday. I'm going to head out on Thursday because I had a friend from overseas coming in from Rome, and I had dinner with him last night. So I'm still in New York, but I'll be overseas for the show next week.
And everybody keeping track of where Alex is, that you have all the information you need right now.
There you go.
All right, good. So here we are for yet another edition. We have overtime coming up after the show at 8 o'clock on YouTube. Check the link on 2600.com or just go to channel 2600 on YouTube and find us there. We have a few interesting stories that we're going to be hopefully getting into. Here's a story that just came flying across our desk right before the show. Asking the age-old question, does Microsoft hate books more or its own workers? This is from a page called Futurism, and they're quoting The Verge. The Verge reports that the multi-trillion-dollar giant is gutting its employee library and cutting down on digital subscriptions in favor of pursuing what's internally described as an AI-powered learning experience. Oh, my God. So they're basically cutting back. They actually used to carry 2600, or they might still up until they do this. But cutting back on digital subscriptions and getting rid of magazines, are they in trouble? Do they need to cut corners, Microsoft? Oy, well, let me just read what it says here. Seriously, we wish we could explain to you what the hell that is. But most of the details on this AI-focused transition are maddeningly clear. I got to learn how to say that word more. I mean, I'm going to be using it a lot. Maddeningly, that's as close as I'm going to get. Very vague. Yeah, what we do know, according to the reporting, is that the cheapskates upstairs are ending employee subscriptions to news outlets, which have basically been there for a long, long time. Not only do Microsoft employees tell The Verge that they've lost access to publications, but they're also unable to digitally check out business books from the Microsoft library, which itself is being targeted by this new AI pivot. According to an internal Microsoft Frequently Asked Questions, FAQ, the library housed in Building 92 has been closed as part of Microsoft's move towards a more modern, connected learning experience through the, ready, Skilling Hub. Yeah, the Skilling Hub. I feel like I'm in a Harry Potter novel or something. We know this change affects a space many people valued, the company said. But for some reason, we're going to do it anyway. Yeah, so meanwhile, employee subscriptions aren't being renewed for pretty much the same reason, because it's a, quote, part of Microsoft's shift to a more modern AI-powered learning experience through the aforementioned Skilling Hub. All told, the cuts are yet another example of how Microsoft has gone completely bonkers for AI. Urban legend that the company says that Microsoft's library, when it was housed in its old location, does anybody know where that was?
Those of us who are looking at the same story as you know where that was. But
you're reading along with me? Building 92 is where it is now. It used to be on the second floor of Building 4. And the library, wow, okay, now I understand. I understand why they have to do what they're doing, in its old location at least. The library was so heavy that it caused the building to sink. I couldn't make this up. Yeah, okay, but they moved to Building 92. Do you have the same problem in Building 92? Well, they say that's probably a myth anyway, but now it sounds like Microsoft is happy to let this trove of knowledge, if not literally sink into the earth, fall by the wayside on the altar of AI. Boy, these people, they know how to write. That's the Futurism website there. Which unfortunately doesn't print the URL anywhere on this page I printed. But it's probably futurism.something. I'm sure you can find it.
.com.
Thank you, Rob. Thank you. An executive from SNS, a news organization that works with Microsoft for over two decades but is now being cut off, absolutely roasted its former customer for the changes. Technology's future is shaped by flows of power, money, innovation, and people, none of which are predictable, based on LLMs, large language models, probabilistic regurgitation of old information. Wow, there's a song in there somewhere. That's from Barrett Anderson, Chief Operating Officer of SNS. We look forward to welcoming Microsoft back into the SNS community whenever they decide they would like to return. Boy, this is something. I mean, yeah, I know there's a war on literacy, but I didn't expect it to reach into, you know, the corporate employee realm, and literally have subscriptions canceled, libraries closed in favor of AI. I mean, it just seems like such an ill-advised move.
It does, but I think there's probably something a little more sinister behind it. And Rob, if you could open up that article that you found. Yesterday from PCGamer.com, Microsoft CEO warns that we must do something useful with AI or they'll lose social permission to burn electricity on it. We need AI, so we need AI. And I'm never sure if it's pronounced Ouroboros or Ouroboros, but I think there is a – seriously, I have no idea. But I think there is a weird cause and effect wag the dog thing. Microsoft is convinced it needs AI, so it needs more AI because it's convinced it needs AI.
Wow. I remember when they were warning us about AI, and now it's just they're shoving it down our throats. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, and this isn't the only article. This article on PC Gamer, Satya Nadella, the CEO of Microsoft, has been all over the place trying to talk up AI and also tell the tech world, hey, you got to start using this stuff, and forcing it on people. There have been the stories over the past weeks and months about Microsoft forcing AI functionality into the Windows operating system, no matter how hard people don't want it. And so the company has taken this very firm stance of, yes, AI is definitely a thing. And for them to go to the extent of shutting down an employee library because the availability of actual useful things like books makes the AI bubble look bad and look more bubbly, I wish I could say this surprised me, but it very sadly doesn't. But, you know, you would think they would appreciate the presence of a library that's strong enough to sink a building. That would maybe counteract how this bubble is floating the building upwards and into space.
I like the idea of libraries attacking humans somehow, whether it's sinking a building or collapsing in some other way. It's something heartening about that. Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, this is so counterproductive in so many ways to my mind. I mean, you think back to the promise of technology. You think about this very broadly. You know, we were supposed to have these infinite bookshelves in the cloud, but now all of a sudden budgets and platform economics keep reminding us that access to these things isn't actually ownership. If you don't have what you're reading in your hand, if you don't have it in some kind of open format, and it is placed into a DRM straitjacket or is out in the cloud that somebody can just disappear.
Well, they did have it in their hand, though. I mean, it's a library. They could physically touch it, and it's still being taken away.
And it's still being taken away because it's the subscriptions. And part of this, though, I think what's really dangerous is that it's the centralization of this type of knowledge now and centralized control over the types of knowledge, the authoritative knowledge now that apparently is AI curated. And so the corporate overlords now have better access to what goes into it and what comes out of it as well. And so this curated knowledge is different. And so they have more control over what the employees are going to be ingesting in the skilling hub, as you called it, I believe, Emmanuel.
Well, I didn't call it that. They called it that. They came up with that term.
They called it that, sure. So this notion of centralization, though, is what really bothers me. And I don't think knowledge and reading should be some kind of should be a power centralized in some sort of corporate overlord.
Gila, did you have something else?
I did. I just thinking about the skilling hub really quickly. I was hopeful for the briefest of moments that someone named Skilling had donated some money and they named it the skilling hub. And that's not what it is.
No,
I just looked it up. No, it's a training.
Oh. Sorry. I've got to turn the volume off of my phone. I'm sorry. That was another ICE raid. Sorry. Yeah. Continue what you were saying.
No, but I was hopeful that, again, it was named after someone with the name Skilling, and it's not. And the Skilling Hub, I give up. I that's it. I'm going to go live in a hole and just not talk to anybody ever again.
And the very fact that Microsoft is willing to measurably make its own employees' jobs and lives more difficult by forcing them to use a tool unsuited to the purpose of anything, it really speaks to how much of a bubble this is. They're putting all the hype out there. They're putting all the, you know, let's get this going out there. They're putting the appearances out there, but it's impossible to put the work in, and they've just made it harder for people to work.
I'm sorry. I'm updating my phone here. That was an ICE raid in Central Islip, New York, on Wheeler Road. Anybody out there? That might be something to be concerned with. There was a lot of ICE activity on Long Island today. Every time that happens, I get a siren on my phone. Central Islip, East Islip, Patchogue, that general area, Brentwood as well. So if you're in those areas, keep an eye out. ICE is on the prowl. And every time that happens, though, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people who are alerted. I only get results in Suffolk County on Long Island, but there are all kinds of ICE alert apps. We've talked about them many times on this show, and you can get them as well and find out when something is happening in your area and do the appropriate thing. which I think is an obligation for us. Yes, Alex, go ahead.
Yeah, well, speaking of ICE, I think last week we talked about a little about how this pro bono type of activity that I was engaging in and hoping to engage in on behalf of ICE detainees. And actually last week, Friday night, was the first time that I had actually gotten a detainee client through this pro bono effort associated with NYU. And so Friday night, I was actually pretty ill that day, and I had I was about to leave for the Poconos, and then there was a detainee that was picked up at the immigration court. And this was a guy, this is my client now. He was with his partner. He was going to immigration court, lives over in Ossining, New York, so upstate New York, came all the way down to Manhattan. And he shows up doing what he's supposed to do to stay in the country and go to his court appearance because he was granted essentially parole asylum at the border. And he had his two kids with him, and ICE picked him up. In fact, ICE actually, as I understand it, detained the entire family, kids included, at the outset, and then decided just to detain the father. And so the father's partner, who doesn't drive, had no way of getting back to Ossining, New York. They were stranded there with their kids. And that night I was able to put together a petition for writ of habeas corpus, file it before I got on the road. By the time I got to the Poconos, Judge Utkin in the Southern District of New York, who was the Part 1 judge, who's basically the on-duty judge for emergency orders and whatnot, had seen the petition for the writ of habeas corpus and issued an order. And generally what will happen, Emmanuel and, and Co., is that ICE will detain these people and then they'll quickly move them out of the jurisdiction, or they'll house them someplace that's outside of the Southern District of New York or the Eastern District of New York, and it becomes difficult to locate them, or they might just deport them to another country. So the order that we requested and the order that the judge issued prevented ICE or the federal government from deporting this person or moving them outside of the jurisdiction of the court and outside of the kind of Newark, New Jersey area. And so we were able to get that done, but this, I feel like, is just the tip of the iceberg now. Now we're going to have to fight with the government to get this guy back because it's very likely that they are using the wrong authorities to detain people. But in any event, like I promised last week, I did get my hands dirty this week, filed that petition, and I have to say I'm very proud to be one little grain of sand in the gears of the ICE machine here. And it's not just me. It's me and thousands of lawyers in New York that are pushing back against these detentions, one after another after another. Yep. We're going to try to get these people out.
Alex, you are a little grain of sand, and we couldn't be prouder of what you're doing. And I think the question is, how can other people get involved? Do you have any kind of means for people who might also be lawyers or be able to help in some other way to fight this fight?
Yeah, I mean, I think you just have to keep your eyes and ears out and watch out for your neighbors. And you know, what I know about essentially being a lawyer here is that we need people to help. We need people to continue to file these petitions for writs of habeas corpus. And like I said, you know, when I went to the training on these issues, I was just totally shocked at how many lawyers were there from not-for-profit organizations, from legal defense organizations, from big law firms, from small law firms, from in-house organizations. I mean, it was really absolutely incredible. But I think that, you know, there are a lot of organizations that are also doing this work at NYU. It's called Immigrant ARC. That's ARC. I'm also part of the Tech Advisory Board of Human Rights First, or HRF and Human Rights First. We've had quite a few of my colleagues on this show over the last several years, and they're doing a lot of work pushing back against the Trump administration and on behalf of detainees and those who are continuing to seek asylum in the United States. And so I think supporting those organizations, volunteering, becoming your own bit of grain of sand in the gears of the ICE machine is what we all need to do.
Well, this is what I consider to be true patriotism and a measure of integrity. And we've seen a real lack of that lately with our elected officials, whether it be through their actions or through their inactions. We have to fight back. We have to make our own way, whether it's keeping track of what's going on or actually getting your hands dirty, as you have done. We all have to do something to resist this because it's a real blemish on what this nation allegedly stands for. And I think more people are waking up to that fact now, regardless of how they voted last year or 2 years ago. It's really kind of shocking when you see what's happening in our streets, and it's sad when you realize there are bustling communities filled with people, you know, building a stronger society. They are completely silent now. People are hiding in their homes. I'm not even exaggerating. People are afraid to go outside because if they go outside, they might be grabbed by ICE. And when you're outside walking around, they'll just tackle you. You know, they won't show a warrant or anything like that because they probably don't have one. If you're in your house, at least you can say, I'm not letting you in because you don't have a warrant. They might kick the door in anyway because that's who they are. But it's what a lot of people are doing right now. And, you know, it's not even people who are undocumented. It's people who are citizens who might look a little from like they're from someplace else. That's where we are right now. So if you think that's where we should be, that's how our society is supposed to be acting right now, okay, sit back. Don't do anything. But if this bothers you, this is the time. This is the time to stand up and do something. You'll find a lot of company. You'll find a lot of amazing people. And you will feel great after knowing that you have helped. And Alex, I hope that you're feeling that because you are helping. Just be aware, these ICE bastards, they don't follow the law. They don't follow court orders. They've been caught so many times smuggling people out of the area, you know, and they're gone. And they shrug their shoulders and say, we don't know where they are. They break the law constantly. And that is why, you know, they need to be fought at every level. So when you see people shouting them down in the street, don't feel sorry for them. Don't feel, because they're tearing apart families. They're tearing apart communities. This is not about the worst amongst us, as Trump likes to say, you know, the evil people who commit all kinds of crimes. It's not about they're grabbing grandmothers. They're grabbing children. They're doing such horrible things. It's a nightmare. It has to end. And the only way it's going to end won't be through our elected officials. They're either cowards or complicit. It's through us. It's through us. We have the power. And this is the time to realize that, especially young people. My God, you know, I've been to a number of demonstrations, and it's mostly older people. Where are the young people? I know in Minneapolis there's young people in the streets. Yeah, absolutely. Do we have to wait for them to shoot people here to wake up? You know, if all the young people got out and were as angry as the old people, this would end quickly. It really would. So that's my advice. And I really hope people take this seriously. Go ahead, Alex, and then we'll move on.
Yeah, and one final point here, too, is that you don't have to be pro illegal alien in this country to oppose ICE here. But I mean, the biggest issue with ICE here is exactly what you said, Emmanuel, that they're breaking up families, and that what they're doing has a racially disparate impact, and they're targeting the Latino communities more than any other, of course, right? Because that's where they think they're going to find the most fertile source of undocumented persons in this country.
Well, they're
right?
Also targeting Somalis and Chinese and people from all over the world. But yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, they're not limiting themselves just to Latinos. Yeah, for sure. But the issue is, illegal immigration. Well, you know, we are supposedly a nation of laws, right? We don't need to resort to warrantless detention or stops that are based on nothing even resembling suspicion, that are based on based entirely on immutable characteristics.
We don't. They do, because they have nothing else. Intimidation.
Right. No.
Intimidation is their MO.
That's exactly right. You know, if we're going to deal with the issue, we need to deal with it as a nation of laws, through due process, through notice and opportunity to be heard, and making sure that we adhere to the ideals on which this country was founded and on which this country was built. You think back 100 years ago, what was New York like but for all of the immigrants that came in, the Italians, the Polish, you know, everybody that built the subways, that built the very infrastructure of the buildings in which we're sitting right now, you know, we're all immigrants. So it's an idiotic, crazy time.
Not all of us are immigrants, and those who have been here for centuries, they're being targeted by these bastards.
That's true, too.
Which is the ultimate irony.
Yeah, it really is. So, in any event, I'll get off my soapbox.
Yeah, let's step down from this for a while. I just hope people wake up. And I think, you know, it's appropriate to remind everybody as much as we can, regardless of the forum, what's going on out there. All right, getting back to artificial intelligence, and this is going to seem ridiculous compared to what we're talking about. You know, I've been having this experience with AI because, you know, I've been asking advice. I had this... you know, this tooth extraction a week or so ago. By the way, I'm doing much better, thank you. You know, I've been asking AI for advice, and I've noticed something interesting. It's been very helpful. It really has been providing me with great information on that. But this particular conversation or thread that I have been engaged in with Gemini, which is Google's artificial intelligence, it basically, the conversation is seeping into other conversations. I'll give you an example. I was asking a question about a Samsung Galaxy. I said, I notice it tends to play notification alerts as soon as I pick it up. Why don't they play when the notification actually comes in? You know, like right now, what happened? I picked up the phone and that's when that siren went off. I think that could have come in, you know, hours earlier, but it doesn't tell me until I pick up my phone. So Gemini answered that question saying, since you mentioned being at an awkward angle for your project, okay, that's a reference to my tooth again, because my tooth was at an awkward angle. I used that phrase weeks ago because the crown was falling out, so I said it's at an awkward angle, so it's hard for me to access it. And everything I've asked it since then makes reference to that. So now I'm talking about a Samsung phone, and it brings up the awkward angle, and then it says you might be using flip to mute without realizing it. And it gives helpful information after that. But, you know, that wasn't necessary. That wasn't really part of the conversation. Here's another one. When playing back audio files in Winamp, often the file ends before the counter reaches the end time. The audio and total time don't appear to be affected, but the timer, whether counting up or down, often seems inaccurate. Is this a known issue? Answer, this is a classic issue that has plagued Winamp users for decades. It isn't actually a bug in the software's code, but rather a limitation in how Winamp calculates time for certain types of files, specifically VBR, variable bitrate, MP3s. Since you mentioned you're already dealing with awkward angles and precision issues with your crown application, I can see why an inaccurate timer would be particularly annoying. What? What does that have to do with it? What does my tooth have to do with Winamp? This is ridiculous. Okay, here's one more. I have a friend who has lost all forms of ID, and they can't begin the process of getting ID because they need a form of ID in order to do this. It's a catch-22 situation. Is there any recourse for them? Gemini, I know it feels like trying to apply a tiny fix to a huge problem at a very awkward angle, but once that first document, usually the birth certificate is in hand, the rest of the doors start to unlock. Yeah, then every single conversation I've had bringing up different items comes back to the awkward angle of, how am I ever going to turn this off? For the rest of my life, talking to Gemini, it's going to keep bringing up the awkward angle of my tooth. So, you know, this kind of tells me that while it seems amazing, it seems magical, it's, you know, there are certain limitations and flaws that we're going to stumble upon, and they're going to seem awfully weird when we find them.
This is like if anyone's ever been that person who shows up to, say, school or work, and you're wearing, like, an interesting belt or something, and everyone's noticing your belt, and all of a sudden, you're the person with the belt, and you come in the next day, and everyone's like, you're wearing a different belt, where's the other belt? And for the rest of your time in that school or workplace, you'll be, hey, where's the belt, kid? Except in artificial large language model form. I think you're just permanently the awkward angle guy now, unless you find some way to clear Gemini's memory of what you did before.
Well, it's just weird how that particular phrase stuck. I've said many things to artificial intelligence, but why those two words? It's constantly bringing it up. And, you know, I was thinking, do I bring it up to Gemini? You know, do I have that awkward conversation with Gemini? Say, will you please stop referencing my tooth whenever you try to solve a problem? Or I don't want to offend it, but then it might start referencing that. I don't know. Kyle, go ahead.
I was just going to ask, I think it's probably an obvious question, but this happens across conversations with this particular chat.
Yeah, I open different tabs to have different conversations, but apparently they link together. So.
Well, in a way that sort of remembers some of your, you would think, mm-hmm. contained conversations, but it's now becoming a part of the way you speak with this particular one.
Yeah, it's going to remember this for all time, I guess. Although, you know, I think it doesn't last beyond a few weeks, but if I keep having a conversation, it might prolong the life of this. All right, let's hope it doesn't. January has become a nightmare for millions of Windows users as we're picking on Microsoft tonight. Microsoft's latest January update creates a surprising raft of issues. There have been multiple emergency updates, but serious problems remain, and there's no firm timeline on fixes. Windows Latest, which is a publication of some sort, says this year's first mandatory Windows 11 update is a mess. Users keep reaching out to share their nightmare experience. For those unaware, this update is a mandatory security patch, so it's going to attempt installation whether you like it or not, and that makes failures unavoidable. Three of the issues have been acknowledged by Microsoft: the classic Outlook freezing bug, the remote desktop bug, and the failure to shut down bug. But it doesn't look like there were only three issues that needed Microsoft's attention. They're looking into an issue with desktop.ini that likely means it'll be fixed soon, but there's also a new sleep state issue that is garnering increasing user complaints. This preserves battery and power, but the issue is PCs are not falling asleep as planned. Windows Latest says there's a regression bug in Windows 11.25H2 on the desktop S3 sleep path. Wow. Even with hybrid sleep and wake timers disabled, the system-level maintenance activator, called System Events Broker, does not properly clear the maintenance wake context after the first wake, causing the second sleep to wake immediately, and that's the weirdest sentence I think I've ever read. That's what Microsoft users are dealing with today. So our sympathies go out to you, and there's not much else we can say.
Yeah, it's so good that we don't use anything like that. We were just, like, way above anything like that affecting us ever.
Well, you know, I think when updates are forced upon you, it's unavoidable. This is going to happen. If you can say, you know what, I'm going to wait, see what happens with the rest of the world, and I'll do it next week, that should be your right. And with increasing number of new machines and new OSs, you don't have that right. They just say, no, you have to reboot now, and, you get screwed as a result.
Yeah, it's a really important part of the life cycle of running a computer. I feel like software companies that specialize in operating systems should have a special attention to maintaining the software, being somewhat competent at it, and, of course, making when those things occur, making them accurate and convenient in a way that doesn't disrupt the user experience.
Did you have something, Alex? Go ahead.
Yes, I kind of feel bad for Microsoft in this respect here. I haven't used a Microsoft machine, Windows-based machine, in quite a while now, actually, I guess a couple of years. But, you know, you find them really only... I wouldn't say only, but you find them all the time, really, in the corporate environment, right? They're cheaper machines. They run Windows. It's easy to upgrade, to patch, and, you know, they just have become these unloved corporate workhorses that, you know, nobody wants to have in their home anymore. These are work machines. They're not fun, and I don't know. It just seems like the experience has just gotten worse and worse, for at least for me, with respect to Windows, since Windows 95. I mean, and that was the first time, Windows 95. I remember when I installed it back in 1995 and dropped down to a DOS prompt, and it was the first time when you typed VER that Windows became the actual operating system. It wasn't DOS anymore. It was Windows 95 was the operating system. It wasn't a program that you ran on DOS. It became the OS. Mm-hmm. And that was the beginning of the end for me.
Yeah, I look fondly back at the DOS days, and I still use command prompts occasionally if I'm on a Windows machine to actually get things done. Yeah, you know, you're right, a corporate machine, and that's why they feel, you know, they can just do a reboot overnight because you're not using your machine then. You know, if a recreational machine you're using all the time, and it should be up to you when you have to do updates or reboots or things like that.
Yeah, I was looking at an online discussion about this on Reddit, and somebody said, and this is hilarious to anybody familiar with the conventional wisdom around things like running an OS, Windows in particular. The wisdom has always been, you know, as soon as an update comes out, you gotta install that update in order to be the most safe you can, in order to be running your computer safely. But somebody is talking about all these issues and says that my Windows 11 workstation hasn't had a Windows 11 update since October of last year. I don't like living dangerously, so that's why I've got automatic updates disabled.
Nice.
Up is down, left is right.
Well, you know, I agree, because I think it should be up to the person running the machine when an update is convenient for them. You know, rebooting in the middle of work. I had a laptop that would do that, and you couldn't turn it off. It would just keep updating and rebooting, and you would lose things as a result of that, and that's not serving.
One of my colleagues had to completely reinstall every single thing on his machine at work a couple days ago. One day last week, because his machine hung at 95% of a Windows update, uh-huh, and he couldn't get anything done. So he just had to wipe the machine and start from fresh.
Wow, that's a nightmare. Hey, you guys know what skip lagging is? There's some controversy about this. Now I'm getting blank stares from everybody. No? Nobody knows what skip lagging is. Okay, let me tell you what skip lagging is. It's a lot of fun. It basically involves airplane travel. It works like this. Say a passenger wants to travel from New York to Charlotte, North Carolina, but the nonstop route is pricey. So instead, they book a cheaper flight that takes them from New York to Denver with a layover in Charlotte. And rather than fly all the way to Denver, they just get off in North Carolina and ditch the rest of the ticket. Yeah, I mean, you know, think about how crazy that is, that a flight to Denver via Charlotte is cheaper than a flight to Charlotte from the same place. But that's the reality. That's what's going on. Now, travel agents have known about hidden city fares for decades, and in some cases, travel agents would knowingly tell their customers. And there's one site that has helped popularize hidden city ticketing. It's called skiplagged.com. The website allows users to type in their desired destination, locating flights where that destination is actually a stopover en route to another city with a less expensive fare. The customer simply exits the airport at the connecting city and never completes the second leg of the journey. Well, last week, American Airlines filed suit against SkipLagged in federal court. In its complaint, American alleges that SkipLagged's practices are deceptive and abusive. Yeah, up is down, that's for sure. SkipLagged deceives the public into believing that even though it has no authority to form and issue a contract on Americans' behalf, somehow it can still issue a completely valid ticket. It cannot. Every ticket issued by SkipLagged is at risk of being invalidated. I don't know if issuing a ticket is the issue here. Officials for the site could not be reached for comment, but SkipLagged, which has been around for a decade, has survived past lawsuits from the likes of United Airlines and Orbitz. It even brags about these victories on its site, saying, "Our flights are so cheap, United sued us, but we won." Now, it should be pointed out, skip lagging is not illegal, but most major airlines, including American, Delta, Southwest, United, they don't allow it. I'm not really sure how you prevent it. For one thing, airlines, I'm reading from this article here, and I might take exception to this, which comes from NPR, airlines lose money on the practice. Yeah, I'm not really sure how they lose money. For a non-direct flight, they have a lower price ceiling compared to direct flights so that they can attract customers. When someone skips out on the final leg of a trip, airlines can't fill the empty seat, which would have sold for more money had it not been booked as part of a multi-stop itinerary. But they sold the ticket. If you had stayed on the plane, they would make exactly the same amount. So I don't see what the difference is. Now, according to this travel expert, professor at the University of British Columbia's Sauder School of Business, Tim Hugh. They are selling that seat with a 95% probability that you'll show up. That's what the airline accounted for. So that's a big loss in the system. In addition, failing to board a connecting flight can cause confusion and delays at the gate. The airlines will make announcements such as paging passenger John Doe or Jane Doe. The airline doesn't want to leave people behind. Well, that's not really true. They don't care if they leave you behind. They don't want to have to fish out your luggage if you check bags. It's a bad idea to check a bag and do this. Now, if an airline finds out what you're doing, it could simply cancel your ticket or even ban you from flying with it. That's what reportedly happened to a North Carolina teen recently who booked an American Airlines flight from Florida to New York but disembarked at his Charlotte connection. The boy's father told Insider that American banned him from flying the airline for 3 years. If you've done this repeatedly, the airline is going to say you owe us money. They may be willing to settle, but or they may want to collect all of it, but airlines can and will take steps to protect themselves. Again, protect yourselves from what? From yourselves, it sounds like. There are other drawbacks as well. Even if your attempt at skip-lagging is initially successful, it's only likely to work for one-way travel. Once the airline realizes you didn't fly to your ticketed destination, it's almost certain to cancel your return, and that does make sense. And finally, any checked luggage would arrive at the ticketed destination without you. No, that's not true. They will take your luggage out, because if they didn't take your luggage out, that means that a potential terrorist could load something onto a plane and then just leave and have things happen without them being present. And that's a big, you know, a big red flag. Gila, you have something to say?
I have a question, actually, which is what moved you to share this article today?
Well, the lawsuit, I think, is in the news. This story just came on, came across right before the show. So I believe the lawsuit is new. It's also called a travel hack, which it is in a sense, but, you know, it just seems like common sense, you know. The consumer should be looking out for themselves, and if this is cheaper, do what's cheaper.
They should, but, you know that thing where your Google alert will sometimes feed you old stories?
Sure.
This lawsuit was settled in 2024.
Oh, look at that. The date is 2023. But the story I looked at was today. Wow. Okay. But, okay, the issue is still a current issue.
I was just a little thrown by, I was like,
You keep track of all the lawsuits against airlines, or that airlines?
I do, actually. Okay. I have no other hobbies.
All right. This could have happened yesterday. I swear,
I looked up skip-lagging because I was curious what the etymology of it was, and then the article popped up, and I was like, oh, this is from 2023.
Okay, okay. Well, then you can tell us what happened. Did they win?
In 2023, skip-lag was sued by American Airlines. In August 2024, a district court judge in Texas ruled that skip-lag had not breached contract, but had violated Americans' copyrights.
Copyrights? Oh, by having something on a website?
I'm just reading from Wikipedia now.
Okay, this is unusual that we report a story and the story has a conclusion that would normally take a year. So I consider this a public service.
Woohoo!
Wow. But, you know, the way the airlines speak, it sounds like they're being ripped off. And this is just typical legal contortions that we put ourselves through, where we believe this nonsense. You know, they're the ones setting the price. If they don't want people to take advantage of the price, then raise the price. But, you know, they cannot force you to get on a plane you don't want to get on. If you decide you're done, you're getting off here, that's your right. And they've already sold the ticket, so they can't complain that they're losing money because they already sold the ticket.
Absolutely. And airline prices have always been completely opaque in terms of making any sense. You know, our friend T. Prophet, who has written so much about travel hacks and things and how to take advantage of loopholes in this sort of thing, would probably have a lot to say about this. But at the same time, like, we accept it from airlines. There have been stories over the past couple of months about stores trying to, like, see if they could get away with charging different customers different amounts for the same product, even groceries and things like that. And that idea freaks people out, and you know, the protests happen, and the company's back off. But no one expects any better of the airline industry.
Yes, but we can be better and find better deals. We just went, Kyle and I just went through this getting back to the States. We couldn't get a direct ticket back. We had to hop around Europe to get a better fare. And it was just ridiculous that we had to do that. You know, you have to do your research, but oftentimes you'll find yourself on the same plane paying less because you traveled longer. And I don't see how anyone benefits from that, but that's just the reality right now. Okay, final story. This is the House of Lords. The House of Lords, you know, can someone explain them to me? They're not elected. They get lifetime appointments. It's like a huge Supreme Court in the UK that can just basically they can't prevent laws from becoming they can't prevent bills from becoming laws, but they can't introduce laws. And I don't know, Alex, you probably know something about this, but basically they backed the move to ban under 16s in the UK from social media platforms, 261 votes to 150. Yeah, there's a lot of them. Opposition peers voted to support a ban through an amendment to the government's schools bill. The government has indicated it will try to overturn the amendment in the Commons while it holds its own consultation on a potential ban. Okay, I got confused who's standing up for what. But basically, the whole thing concerns a ban of social media for people under the age of 16. Former Tory schools minister Lord Nash, one of those sponsoring the proposed change, said children's use of social media was a societal catastrophe and a ban would give teenagers a few more years to mature before using the platforms. He said there was overwhelming evidence about the damage caused by teenage social media use, arguing it was linked to mental health problems, online radicalization, and disruptive behavior in classrooms. He dismissed the government's consultation as a last-minute attempt to kick the can down the road, adding, "What are we waiting for? We know our children are being harmed." So this is an interesting issue. We only have a couple of minutes to discuss it. It's taken effect in Australia, I know that much. The question is this effective? Is just simply a ban effective? To me, I believe that it's pretty easy to get around these bans, and that kids are smart enough to be able to do that fairly easily. But there's also no question that too much social media is bad, not just for kids, but for, you know, grown adults as well. Any thoughts?
Yeah, the real question here is what qualifies as social media? You know, is it just using things like Facebook or Twitter, or would it be social media if a kid self-hosted and put up their own blog, or even just posted to a web forum somewhere in which you interact with others? The drilling down exactly what qualifies as something dangerous versus just using the web, it's, I think, an important part of this.
Well, you know, one thing I did hear is that WhatsApp is exempt because parents like to use WhatsApp to keep in touch with their kids. So, you know, I don't understand how that solves anything then if you're going to have exemptions. Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, and to go back to your original question here for the edification of our listeners here, the House of Lords is this unelected upper chamber of the UK Parliament. They actually sit supposedly like alongside the House of Commons, but their function is really about revision. So they're considered to be a revising chamber. They go through the bills that are set to become law. They go through them line by line and they revise them. They say, oh, this might be good, this might be bad. And sometimes they send things back to the House of Commons, the elected body of Parliament, and say, hey, think again on this. Or this might have problems, or this would have, you know, free speech implications.
Well, I guess my question is, how does one become a member of the House of Lords?
You have to be appointed to the Lords.
And who appoints you?
I think it's the monarch. I'm not sure.
Yeah, you know, I have some issues with that. And what do they call female members? Do they call them lords as well?
Yes, they're all called peers. They're peers of each other.
Of each other,
not of peerage,
regular people.
Yeah.
All right, that's just very alien, very strange.
Yeah, but in any event, I mean, look, we talked about this a few weeks ago with respect to the law in New York that was proposed by our governor here that had to deal with whether social media was harmful, and it was whether social media was documented in such a way as to be harmful for children. Right? Like, what does harmful mean? And then there were these alternative arguments to say, well, you know, it's not that children are harmed by social media. It's actually that they go and rush towards social media to try to find some kind of sense of community. I think that's utter nonsense, to be honest with you. I think that, you know, it's very clear that there are deleterious effects on childhood development when it comes to social media, anxiety, depression, jealousy, having, you know, sort of, I think just...
We're going to have to table this because we are out of time.
Oh, we're out of time.
Yeah,
right.
OTH@2600.com is our email address. Join us on Overtime. And join us on Overtime, youtube.com/channel2600, 8 o'clock. We'll see you next week on WBAI.